noticed how, you know, when I'm giving the instructions and you're kind of being reminded in an ongoing way of what we're doing and how to do, that, you know, you kind of, you drift in and out and you do it. And then as the quiet time goes on, there may be more and longer moments of just forgetting to what you're doing, you know, and, you know, the mind drifts off and we get caught up in making plans for later in our life and remembering things that we forgot to do and reviewing the to-do list and stuff like that. And then something happens and, oh, right, we just notice it rather than are in it. And the difference between being caught in our thoughts unknowingly and kind of and being aware that these thoughts are going on is stark. I mean, it's just such a stark difference in experience. And it's when you get how clear that is, like being lost in thought or being aware of thoughts, it's like it's so obvious what suffering is and what not suffering is. It is just so obvious. And it doesn't mean that thoughts stop. It doesn't mean that we don't have to think. It doesn't mean that thoughts are bad. It just means that if we can be aware of thoughts, then we suffer less. We're less entangled. We're less gripped by the thoughts, or the content of the thoughts. And so I mention this because a lot of times we blame the thoughts. We think that thoughts are the enemy or of mindfulness, or, you know, I can't meditate because I think too much or whatever. And that's not true. We really want to understand that thinking is the activity of mind, you know, and we need to know how to think. Those of our ancestors who didn't think, didn't plan, didn't solve problems, didn't kind of review, they didn't pass on their genes. We didn't get their genes. They didn't make it. So we can thank our ancestors for this capacity to think, plan, review, kind of obsess, figure out, explain, because we need to know how to do that. So the challenge for us is how not to make that the enemy of awareness. How to accept and acknowledge, oh, this is normal, this is natural, this is necessary. I like that. Normal, natural, and necessary. Yeah. We're not trying to be unnormal, unnatural, or necessary. We're trying to just see, oh, this is the way it is. Because as soon as you see it, then you it's going on, but you're just not entangled in it. Oh, what a relief. You know, and sometimes, I don't know if you've noticed that, you know, you got a decision to make, or you're confronting an issue in life that's a problem, and you got to try to solve it, or how am I going to respond to this situation, and churning, and, you know, you can't figure it out. You don't feel comfortable with just everything, every option that you come up with, and then, you know, you try to sit, you try to calm the mind down, you try to just let go of it, and, maybe you can just space out for a while, not think about it, let go, whatever. And sometimes in the space of not trying to solve it, this light bulb goes off and you go, oh, now I get it. Now I know what I got to do. I can do this. I can try this. I could respond this way. I could, you know, whatever. And the mind comes up with an understanding that you couldn't figure out through your intention and, you know, kind of solving and churning. And this is insight. This is like, oh, I see how it is now. And it happens with problems, or it happens with decisions we got to make. It happens with when we get caught in struggling with our own natures, you know, our own personality stuff, our own, you know, difficulties in life. You know, we churn, and a lot of awareness is just becoming aware of it, again and again and again, and seeing it in its full full-blown disastrousness. And then, you know, as we just kind of just come back to our practice, just come back to just recognizing the present moment, it relieves the mind of this. Well, it actually, the mind lets go. The mind lets go of what it knows about this problem. Drops out of the entanglement with it for a moment and sees it all from another perspective. Just like, I didn't think of that. I didn't see it that way before. And a resolution to a seemingly unsolvable problem or a paradoxical thing comes into mind. That's insight. Well, this happens both at the personal life issues, personality level, interrelationship stuff, but also with our taking in the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha. And while some of it is, you know, pretty commonsensical and, you know, not too difficult, some of it is pretty out there. It's pretty in there, out there, something. It's so counterintuitive. You know, and the question yesterday from this woman here was, you know, if we keep doing this, aren't we just going to become kind of disconnected, dissociated from everybody else and kind of isolated and kind of in our own little, you know, navel-gazing heaven and kind of forgetting everybody else? And, you know, I tried to answer it yesterday and say, no, yes. yes and no, both. Yeah, we do become more aware of what's going on here, but we're not isolated in here. You know, we have more connectivity or more understanding of our connectivity with the world. And it brings me to the point of just acknowledging that as we do this practice of awareness, you can see we get in touch with our suffering. Physical suffering, mental suffering, anxiety, frustration, disappointment, old hurts, future anticipations. Is there anybody that's not aware of that stuff? You know, we are. And so we see, we suffer. We suffer with anxiety and frustration, disappointment, all those things. And as we just learn to sit with it, open to it, feel into it, let go of it, we come to a different relationship with all of these, well, you know, habits of mind. And maybe we're not quite as compulsive and not quite as obsessed and not as anxious and not quite as, or first we have to become more aware of it, learn how to deal with it, and then we can see that we're not quite as entangled in it. And so we find that we understand ourselves better. And to the extent that we understand this about ourselves, we also understand it about each other. So that when you see other people, you know, your family, your friends, whatever, colleagues of one sort or another, entangled in their minds in a way that you've seen your entanglement, but now have a new understanding, you understand what people are going through. You know, and you can't help but have compassion. You can't help but say to yourself, I know how that feels. I know where that's coming from. You know, not like you're omnipotent or omniscient or you got the answer for them, but you understand it for yourself. And you're more likely to respond to them or offer them a connection that has more understanding and compassion than judgment and kind of isolating, pushing off. So in that way, we become more sensitive to others because we understand ourselves, we understand others, and it's not like we got to become kind of a do-gooder. We don't have to become a Mother Teresa or something like that. It's natural to want to help relieve others of suffering if you have any means to do that. Even if you don't have means to do that, you can want to do that, but that's kind of like can be unwise compassion. So what we're looking at here is not just the suffering and trying to get rid of it. We're looking at suffering and we're understanding its nature. We're understanding how it is that we get entangled in suffering states of mind. So we begin to understand the causes and the conditions that give rise to anxiety, give rise to our fear, give rise to our feeling of guilt or shame or humiliation or whatever we feel. And so as we understand that, as we understand, oh, this is how it comes about. Not just because of others doing what they do, but because of our own conditioning, historical conditioning, but also our own misunderstandings, our own assumptions about how we are, they are, it should be, our own beliefs about that we inherit from, you know, mom, dad, peers, culture. And while we all have been conditioned into a family, a community, a culture, a society, through an educational system, a political system, an economic system, and environmental conditions, we've all been conditioned by that immensely, just so we can kind of get along, kind of navigate a kind of a together this thing called life. But what we learn for that helps us kind of be in a family in a less adversarial way, be in a community with some sense of connection, even if it's very difficult at times. But all that conditioning may not lead to the end of suffering. That kind of conditioning is not for the end of suffering. That kind of conditioning is to make you a decent human being that you can kind of get by with other human beings. But if you want to actually free your heart, mind, from the conditioning that leads to suffering, you're going to have to do something else, which is what we're doing. That's why the Buddha said that if you practice the Dharma in this way, you hear the Dharma, and having heard it, you start to notice it in your life, you start to practice it as we're doing actively here, you will be going against the stream of your conditioning. It's not only the punks, Dharma punks, and it's not only that age group who are against the stream that are against the stream. We're all against the stream. Because the stream of our conditioning is not towards liberation. The stream of our conditioning is to, you know, control, management, you know, dealing with, you know, at the basic level, just kind of being safe enough to be with others. Okay, well that's good. That's necessary, but that's not liberation. So as we see more deeply into our own conditioning, and we see it all the time, you know, the way you deal with pain in the body, the way you deal with difficult emotional stuff personal to you or interpersonal with others, the way you deal with it is conditioned, deeply conditioned. You know, if we were just a 2-year-old, like some national figures in the States, you know, you just kind of whack them, you know, that's it. Yeah, get rid of that problem. Nuke them. You know, and you might see that you try to nuke some of your own stuff too. You know, it's like, God, there, nuke it, there, get rid of that one. Well, you don't get rid of it. That's just our conditioning to, you know, of impatience, I want it my way, and I want it immediately. That's our conditioning too. Can't wait for tomorrow. So when we see this conditioning and we just kind of sit with it and we see how urgent it is and how compulsive it is and how obsessed we are with it being this way and us being this way and them being that way, and then it would be okay for me, it's hard to let go. You can't just let go. I mean, sometimes, you know, you're sitting and, you know, you kind of wake up to the fact that you're kind of entangled in some story and you go, do I need to be doing this now? I don't need to solve this problem now. This is a problem that's been around for centuries, you know. Okay, forget that. And we can let go. Sometimes just recognizing that we're holding on, we can let go. But other times we realize we're holding on, you can't let go. You know, it's like the dog has got you by the tail. And, you know, you get caught in this obsessing about something, someone, yourself in some way, and it's painful. You're aware of it. You know, you're critical of yourself. You're critical of others. You're just caught in this struggle. It's painful. And as much as you'd like to say, oh, forget it, it's okay, you can't. You can't. And you have to be with it. You have to kind of, with practicing awareness, you have to be with it and understand that it's not understood yet. Once we understand things, things fall into place and you're not so entangled. You can let go. But until you understand, until you see all the conditions that are at play here, we'll continue to be obsessed. So a large part of practice is right here. It's at the place where we develop this awareness that can remember to recognize the present moment. And we have some momentum to that where we can't not see the present moment. And what we see is our suffering. And we can't avoid it anymore. The mindfulness is too good. But there isn't enough wisdom to know how to let go. And so this is, you know, as the Buddha said, the first noble truth of dukkha is to be investigated. It's to be known. It's to be discovered. And this is what we do with awareness. You definitely will come in contact with dukkha, pain and vulnerability and obsession and all kinds of insecurity and dukkha. And so when in your practice, as inevitably you will, you'll come upon, you know, stuff that you can't fix. You know, suffering that you can't fix. Don't think that you're doing something wrong. Don't think that the practice isn't working for you. This is the place of practice, is to hang in there with recognizing this suffering, this kind of suffering, watching it, observing it, learning about its nature. Because all mental states have their nature. And we get entangled in them because we don't understand that nature. As soon as we understand that nature, then we know how to not get entangled in it. But we don't. We don't yet know. And so our effort at being aware and just being willing to recognize, be with, feel into, open to, allow, accept, acknowledge painful, difficult stuff is in order to gather the knowledge that will allow us to understand it. To allow wisdom to have that aha moment of like, I get it, okay. And just with that, the entanglement drops away. And, you know, you can't make that happen. You can't force it to happen. It's not quick. There's no magic to it. It's just kind of like grunt work. You just got to be in the front lines of your mind dealing with, you know, unpleasant stuff with awareness until there's enough accumulated knowledge of its nature that wisdom gets it. It's not even you get it. Wisdom just kind of goes, ah, oh, now I get it. Now wisdom gets it, and when that happens, then there's the release, there's the relief, there's the letting go of the wrong understanding of something. You're letting go of the entanglement with assumptions, beliefs, conditioning, the way we were taught as from parents and peers in school and other emotional, you know, histories that we have. We realize it's not like that at all. Huh. Okay. Now, you all know what I'm talking about, right? You can nod, or you can shake, or you can wobble. I'll give you an example. I grew up, you know, in a family, and like we all did, in a little village, and went and did the usual things, school and university and blah, 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 blah. Fell into the Dharma when I was 25 and started practicing. When I was 35, I decided to go to Burma and really get into it, really find out what this practice was about, ordained and was practicing. My dad died when I was 21. And when I was in Burma, after I'd been there a couple of years, I was just doing my practice and all these memories of my father came up. Just who he was in my life, how I experienced him, really. And, you know, we all have memories of growing up, some memories and a lot of gaps too. And some of the gaps started appearing. And I recalled how I actually felt in certain incidences with my father. Now, I always knew that my father drank whiskey. And, you know, it was a habit, and it was kind of a shameful thing. You know, it was kind of like an embarrassment that he was such a drinker. But as I opened to this personal history that I hadn't really seen, I lived through, grew with, but didn't really understand, now I could see, or what was revealed then was how I actually felt as a kid with the, you know, the behavior of my father. You know, just being an unreliable person, and a few moments, and it's only two or three moments in all of my childhood that I saw him express rage. But that's all it takes, is one or two instances of rage, and your body doesn't forget. Your body doesn't forget. And your relationship with that rager, or that rageaholic, is forever conditioning your behavior. Whew. Jeez. You know, later I discovered, furthermore, that I saw all this. I understood, but I didn't realize what the hell was going on as a kid. He was a drug addict, a prescription drug addict. Not only with Valium and Librium, along with a lot of alcohol, he was also psychotic because he was taking Thorazines, like antipsychotic. I mean, this guy was just barely hanging on to a kind of consensual reality that others could kind of navigate. Now, when you grow up in a household like that, now I mention it because, you know what, 50% or more of the room grew up with an alcoholic. I know. Yep. Statistics don't lie. You know, we've all got this conditioning. It's in our culture that we grow up with this kind of emotional abuse and ignorance. And, you know, until we own it, this is my life. This is what happened. This is how it was. You can't be free of it. If you don't know what you're holding on to, those memories of the past and those understandings of the past, the mistrust of the past, the fear that gets caught in your psyche, if you don't understand that, if you don't see it, if you don't feel it, you can't let go of it. This process is a process of self-discovery. This is what we're awakening to. We're awakening to, well, here I am. It's nice to have, you know, the Buddha's description of, you know, liberation and peace and joy and bliss and just kind of living a kind of aloof but not disconnected from the rest of life. But first, and that's good, and that's possible. And we do get taste of that, no doubt about it. But only when we're able to kind of see where the roots of our feet are. Then we can see where the stars in our head are. You know, so the roots of your feet are buried in your personal history. You know, and there's a lot of techniques to help us do that, and there's a lot of soothing techniques to help us do it carefully, not getting overwhelmed. And there's a lot of possibility of spiritually bypassing all this work. Now, I mention it because, you know, we can be so enthusiastic about Dharma and so aspirational about getting there quickly that we don't do the work of putting our feet on the ground, really realizing we are rooted right here to this spot, which includes everything that ever happened in your life. Everything that ever happened in your parents' life. Everything that ever happened in your grandparents' life is right here in your heart. Mm. Do you ever wonder why it takes so long? I say long. It doesn't mean that we can't be insightful. We can. And it's not like we have to see every fear that we ever experienced or every shame that we ever experienced. It's like if you see to the end of fear one time, if you really see fear, really own it, understand it, go to the end of fear, you won't be caught by fear again. Or at least, let's say, there's now a new channel in the mind for dealing with fear. And if you keep kind of reviewing that and walking that path, that new groove in the mind, every time that a fearful situation arises, you soon will not be caught by fear. Or shame, or blame, or depression, or anxiety, or frustration, disappointment, and other things. And this is how we gradually learn to let go of that which you can't let go of by intention. Some things we just see, we just say, let go. But the other things that are more deeply rooted in our obsessions are rooted in beliefs about ourselves, assumptions about ourselves and others, assumptions about life. As we discover the suffering that these wrong assumptions, wrong beliefs, unseen personal history cause us, then we can begin to see it, see the obsession, see the wrong belief, see the misunderstanding, and learn to be free of it. But it's not magical. It's not from reading a book. Reading a book is like a map. Everything I'm saying is like a map. There's a map for you. There's a map of awakening. This is the map of awakening. You know, if you want to take the journey, you're doing the right thing. Keep walking. Keep developing this path. The path of awakening is the Eightfold Path, which is, you know, right speech, right actions, right livelihood, so you don't harm others, dealing with the transgressive torments that, you know, hurt others. Don't do that. Exercise some restraint. Okay. And then right effort, right mindfulness, right concentration, or right samadhi, which purifies our mind of all the obsessive suffering which we're doing. And then from that, we get a right view, a right understanding, and we're able to think correctly. We're able to think skillfully about our experience and what we understand. This is the Eightfold Path, right? These are the eight factors of the Eightfold Path. As we practice, we develop these path factors. We develop the path. We walk the path. This is the path of awakening, is these eight steps, if you will. So that's why we put the context, we put what we're doing here, this development of mindfulness, in context. It's not just, can I learn to sit with knee pain? That's good, but there's more, you know. And just so you know that there's the context, putting mindfulness in the context of your whole life and the possibilities that the Buddha pointed to with the map of awakening, okay. You know, it's something you can really get behind in your life, not just weekend retreat. Weekend retreat's good. I'm not saying not. It's good. Thank you very much. And just so you know that, you know, the difficulties, the challenges, the task of learning how to meditate, learning how to be aware and what's going on, that's why it's so difficult. I mean, because we're not just looking to calm down, be clear, happy ever after. You know, we're really, you know, you get going down this path, and you can't go back. How do you forget what you know? Yeah. So they say, you know, as you begin this journey of awakening, kind of like nobody knows what they're getting into. None of us ever knew what we were getting into when we first started practicing meditation. How could you know? I mean, you don't know. When a snake enters a bamboo tube, does it know where it's going? No. All it knows is as soon as it gets in, it can't go back. And we're just like a snake in a bamboo tube. You got to keep going. You know, it's like there's no backup. You know. So this is welcome to the path, the journey of awakening. This is the way it's going to be. Okay? And it's natural to have a lot of reactions to it, and frustration and disappointment and impatience. And then when you hear this, if you take it in, you get dread. It's like, oh my God, I made a mistake. I came to a retreat. Oh. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. We're all here because we have some intuition of this seed of possibility in here. and we're just following the threads, whatever threads we can that seem to feed this understanding, we follow those. And our life just lurches from one learning experience to another. At least that's the way I see it. I don't know. So, any comments, questions about your practice or anything I've said?
A question.
Yeah.
Yesterday you were referring to greed, like your unwise attention to pleasant, and anger, unwise attention to the unpleasant.
Yeah.
What about delusion?